I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about arts and education. This week is National Arts and Education Week. It also marks the unveiling of the Any Given Child Indie Action Plan. We'll talk about what's in the plan and the importance of art in building young minds. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton, Indie Arts Council Director of Grant Services and Education Partnerships, and Wanda LeGrand, IPS Deputy Superintendent for Academics. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about arts and education because this week is National Arts and Education Week. We're going to be focusing particularly on the Any Given Child Indie 2016-17 Action Plan and what it's going to do, particularly for students in the Indianapolis public schools. If you'd like to join the conversation, like to talk about the arts and education and their importance, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton. He is Indie Arts Council Director of Grant Services and Education Partnerships, and Wanda LeGrand, who is the Indianapolis Public Schools Deputy Superintendent for Academics. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm going to start by asking what, it sounds self-explanatory, but what the National Arts and Education Week is and what all it entails. I'll start with you on that one, Ernest.
Okay. So it was actually established by Congress about a decade ago, and Congress wanted to make sure that the nation was participating in a national dialogue about arts education. One of the things that we know is that Americans identify the arts as one of the priorities that they expect in schools. But not a lot of conversation is happening around the country on that subject. So Congress initiated this, and this year we've, as part of our partnership of Any Given Child Indy, we've decided to really go strong and large with that celebration here in Indianapolis.
So Wanda, tell me what Any Given Child is.
So Any Given Child Indy is an opportunity for us to work with our community partners to create an action plan to increase the exposure of the arts for all of our students in grades K through 8. So it's been a wonderful time. So far this year, we've been together for an entire year creating an action plan that included surveys, analyzing the data so that we can create an action plan that fully encompasses all the arts disciplines and all of our schools that serve kids from grades kindergarten through eighth grade.
And can you talk a little bit about what the activities are for this week here in IPS? I'm going to stay with you on that one, Wanda.
Yes, so we're excited about implementing Any Given Child Arts and Education Week in Indianapolis Public Schools. So what happens this week is an emphasis in all of our schools on the arts. And so we have the privilege in IPS of having two schools that are focused on the arts. It's Broad Ripple Arts and Humanities School, as well as Edison Visual and Performing Arts School. But each of our schools has an emphasis and a love on the arts, not just those two specialized programs. So what you will see in our schools, in each of our schools this week, is a focus on exposing students to all forms of arts throughout the school day and not just during their art time. So in every school, there's an art and a music teacher that focuses on the arts. But what you will see this week is an emphasis on the arts throughout the entire school day at each of our schools.
What other activities are there, Ernest, here in the city? I mean, and we ought to talk about what the action plan is. I mean,
sure.
What the goals are.
Well, and in fact, that's a good place to start because the action plan, one of the action steps that was identified as part of the first year's what we call the community arts team, which was the research team, they identified that the way to close out phase one of the process was the release, public release of the community arts action plan. And that report was released yesterday at the Arts Garden. to a packed house of about 60 people who are arts leaders and as well as media who were there to learn more about what those action steps are. And we'll talk about more about that in a second. And in addition to that, we also announced that 26 arts organizations came together several months ago to say that we want to raise funds for our programs that are in partnership with individual IPS schools. And so we launched that, and you can find information about that at indiearts.org, but 26 arts organizations in partnership with groups. And then there are meetings, and there's a teaching artists talk that happens on Thursday. The whole community is welcome to come to different working group meetings on Thursday, and all that information is available on our website. And the whole week ends actually on Friday with the Creativity Fest at Arts for Learning's new location.
And feel free to give people the website.
Yes, www.indiearts.org.
So let me ask this from both perspectives. What are the outcomes? What goals do you have for this week? I mean, what would constitute making this a success, that definition of what it's supposed to achieve? Wanda, I'll start with you.
What I would constitute as a success at the end of this week is that there's been an exposure in each of our schools about arts education and arts integration, and that we've ignited a stronger fire within the schools and the community to provide arts education for all of our kids in all the disciplines. So if we look at our data that we gathered this past few months ago, we did a survey, and there was a want for more theater and dance, but not a lot of opportunity for theater and dance in our schools. So we would want at the end of this week for people to know that we're very interested in the arts and IPS, and we want a stronger partnership. We want all of our students to be involved in the arts, in every discipline in the arts, so that people by the end will see our passion, but also see where they can plug in with our committees that we have created within our action plan, but plug in to also offer support in those areas.
Ernest, your goals for the week.
Yeah, mine would certainly just build on exactly what Dr. LeGrand just said. We're really interested in that general awareness, going back to Congress's initial idea of increasing the conversation. We want to increase awareness of what the barriers are, what the obstacles are, and start the conversation on how we eliminate those barriers and fill those gaps.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. And I should say to our listeners, if you are just joining us, we are talking about arts in schools and arts and education, because this week is National Arts and Education Week. We're focusing in particular on the rollout of the Any Given Child to Indy 2016-17 Action Plan. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I think Ernest used the phrase barriers to arts education. And Wanda, at some level, has kind of alluded to that, that there are ways that we have to figure out how to almost get arts education beyond the barricades here. Can you talk about what some of those barriers are? I'm going to start with you on this one, Ernest, but I think that gets to really what is the nut of this conversation.
I think, one of the things that we did yesterday was that I presented the information in terms of the survey respondents from arts organizations, and then Wanda presented the information at the press conference about how the teachers responded. So I'll talk about the arts organizations.
Okay.
We had a survey of 53 local arts and cultural organizations were invited to complete a survey so that we would have a baseline, basically, to understand where we are at this moment in time. We didn't look back in history to see what the trends were. We wanted to know what we are at this snapshot moment. And one of the things that we identified was a barrier where that arts organizations identified that it was a challenge actually to work with the schools, knowing who to go to in an individual school and who also to work with on a broader district-wide level. And so arts organizations wanted to work with schools, but they didn't know exactly how. Mm-hmm. Another one is that arts organizations really were very interested in figuring out what's the best way of them matching their resources to the needs of the teachers, arts integration, arts for curriculum, but also things like how do you increase the number of students who are actually going to field trips and taking advantage of those opportunities as close to downtown as the ISO, but as far off as Conner Prairie. And so we looked at those kinds of things and identified those barriers, and then we're working towards meeting them and filling those gaps.
Okay. Wanda.
So when we did the survey with the staff members, the barriers that they were identified right now was initially the lack of funding. Funding specifically for the arts, and funding that could help, that could be infused in different ways. So just the lack of funding. The second one was the lack of instructional time. So teachers were saying, help me find out how I can, within this 8-hour school day, weave in the arts into my lesson plans. And so that's a great time for us to help with arts integration. So it's not separate, but it's an integrated part of your lesson. And then the third thing was the lack of training. So 97%, I believe 94-97% of our teachers said that they would love to have more training on arts integration, but they haven't been trained. So the third barrier was their lack of training in that area.
How much of this, because so much of and I'm aware we've had a focus in education on, you know, the STEM disciplines. And I'm aware, obviously, that there's been a movement to try to change that to STEAM.
Yes.
And slip the A for arts in there as
you.
Well. But Wanda, I'm going to ask you to speak to this first. There has been a little bit of an argument that the focus on the STEM disciplines is that, you know, success rates and all of that and gains, losses, all of that are easier to quantify in those disciplines, to measure, you know. When you're responding to art, that's such an individual and in many ways subjective issue that it's hard to figure out, you know, what's better and what's not with the harder disciplines. And I use harder as in, you know, more quantifiable in that sense. That's less of an issue. Is that part of the problem that arts and arts education struggle with, is that it's hard to measure exactly their successes? Wanda.
I don't think that's the problem as far as measurement. I do believe that we need to look at measuring it in a different way. So we talk a lot about measurement in the state of Indiana about quantitative ways, but we also need to do the qualitative ways. And so a key that you will see different in an arts class or in a class where arts are integrated is that students are more engaged. So students will learn when they're engaged, and art is a great way to engage students. And I think that we can measure engagement, and that engagement will lead to more success.
Ernest, is this a struggle, though, for those of you who are arts advocates?
Well, and certainly I fit into that category of an arts advocate. But what we know, there has been a great deal of research over the last about dozen years in terms of arts education. And I think one of the movements that is really going to become an emphasis of this particular program is a concept of arts education called arts integration, which I think directly relates to your question in a strong way. There are basically three legs of arts education: arts for art's sake, music class, two co-curricular programs going to a program, and then arts integration, which is when you're in the classroom, not only are you learning math or science, but you're also creating an art product that demonstrates your knowledge of that. And that'll be a big focus, and that is directly measurable.
And how is that measurable?
So you're measuring the demonstration of the product. Mm-hmm. What is created to demonstrate knowledge through your artistic outcome of your knowledge of the waterways or math concepts. I was at Edison School just a week ago watching a math class in where they were using music to actually teach subtraction and division. And you can see the results when you compare one class that has it and one class that doesn't.
So in some ways, though, the measure of arts value or arts education's value is that it enhances these other disciplines rather than the value in and of itself. That's the piece that I want to talk about.
Yes.
But I think we're going to have to do that after we take a short break. We are talking about National Arts and Education Week here on No Limits, particularly the unveiling of the Any Given Child Indie 2016-17 Action Plan. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton. He is Indie Arts Council Director of Grant Services and Education Partnerships, and Wanda LeGrand, who is Indianapolis Public Schools Deputy Superintendent for Academics. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about arts education here on No Limits. The hook is that this is National Arts and Education Week, and in particular, we're focusing on the unveiling of the Any Given Child Indie 2016-17 Action Plan, that's going to focus on increasing access to arts education for students in the Indianapolis public schools. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton. He is the Indy Arts Council Director of Grant Services and Education Partnerships, and Wanda LeGrand, who is the Indianapolis Public Schools Deputy Superintendent for Academics. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Jerry has done and send us an email. Our address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry says, are you including crafts with the arts education? Arts meaning handcraft shop and what used to be called home economics. Wanda, I'll start with you on that one.
I think that his question is referring to some of our CTE, career technology education courses. And so we're including that in that we want to have art integrated in those areas as well. So when we say inclusion, we mean in all the disciplines. For us, for our K-8 initiative in Any Given Child, it is just for grades K through 8. But some of those courses are also available to our middle school kids, grades 6, 7th, and 8th. Yes.
And I want to pick up a little bit, Ernest, on the point we were talking about before we went to the break, mm-hmm. about the value of art in its own right.
Right.
And I'll to give you a backdrop, I think it's an argument that has crystallized in my mind because I remember having a conversation once with a newspaper editor who shall remain nameless for the purpose of this conversation, who said that, you know, the reason that arts coverage, for example, in a lot of newspapers has decreased, and, you know, it has, and that you don't see,
right.
except classical music reviews anymore. Most major newspapers, except for the New York Times and a few really big ones, don't have book reviews anymore, anything like that, is that monetizing that coverage is very difficult for them. And that gets back to that question of quantifiable gains. And I'm intrigued because the argument that I hear coming is, well, the arts are valuable because they prop up the the other disciplines where it is easy to quantify gains. How hard is it to make the case for art simply for art's sake?
So I don't think that, and that is not the point in terms of this third leg of arts education called arts integration. There are basically three legs of arts education. There is art for art's sake, and we want to see an increase in terms of art for art's sake in terms of the classroom. Wanda just talked about the success that we've had in terms of music classes, and IPS did a transformation in terms of their whole plan in terms of placing more music teachers in the schools this past year. What we want to do is to also fill the same gaps in terms of dance and theater, and that's where we see the largest gaps in terms of disciplines. And so that really fits into that category of art for art's sake. And what do you learn as part of that? You learn skills in terms of rhythm and in terms of form, in terms of, and basically just creativity in general. And so what are you trying to measure in terms of those disciplines? That it depends on which class. But those are clearly measurable things. And every music class or art class, you receive a grade for your success in completing that work. The other one is co-curricular activities. So the second leg is co-curricular activities. And co-curricular activities is actually going to the art museum or a theater show. Everybody knows about the Broadway hit Hamilton. Well, you're interested in learning more about American history. You go to a play and then you take a class. And so it brings that story to life. What's incredibly powerful about arts integration is that arts integration is not that the arts are used to enhance learning in terms of music or science, but it's 50% of the process. And so you are learning the same kinds of things that you do as in terms of arts for art's sake, in terms of rhythm and muse and form and sound, but you're also learning the math skills. So we don't see them as one supporting the other. They are united. It's a 50-50% thing.
Wanda, you talked earlier about how there is a hunger for the arts in many school communities now. And I want to ask a little bit about what produces that hunger, because the way you were describing it almost made it sound like there's this sense of loss, that something has drifted away from us that was precious to us, and we should reclaim it. And when I think particularly of IPS high schools, I think of like the magnificent theaters most of them have, that you literally, you don't see anything built like that even at a professional level these days. Is there a sense that at some level this is something that we need to bring back more strongly into the way we teach children and prepare our young people? Is there an element of restoration here?
I'd say yes. I do believe that within our students, there is a desire for more arts. And so 2 years ago, I believe it started 2 years ago, we started during spring break having what we call an arts fling. And so we wanted to know if our students, our elementary students, would be interested in giving up parts of their spring break just to participate in arts disciplines across the district. And there was a huge turnout. And so we did it again this past year, and we'll do it again this year. And so that showed us the need from the student level that they wanted more arts. That also led to us creating for the 15-16 school year that every school received a full-time, at least one full-time art and music teacher, whereas before it was allocated based on the size of your school. So you might have had an art teacher for one day, but now every school has at least one art and at least one music teacher. And that started with our sharing of the arts fling in the spring and during our fall spring break, and students really being interested. So that let us know there's an interest of our students to have more arts, and so we provided those arts. I see art. I have to admit, and I tell Ernest all the time, I have no artistic talent. My husband's a visual artist, but I'm an athlete. But I see arts and athletics the same, in that they should be equally as important in schools for students, so that we provide those opportunities for students. Very rarely do you hear about reducing athletics, but you might hear in some other districts about reducing arts. And so for me, they're equally as important for our students. Even more so in that this is something that we do during the school day. So you don't have to, as an athlete, come after school. We believe that you should have arts during your school day, arts for art's sake, but also arts integration. As a former high school math teacher, it was very easy for me to incorporate the visual arts because my husband's a visual artist. But it's also easier for integration in other subject areas where we can also see the benefits. And our students will, again, be more engaged in the lessons.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the importance of art in education. This week is National Arts and Education Week, and here in Indianapolis, we are commemorating the week with the unveiling of the Any Given Child Indy 2016-17 Action Plan, with a focus on setting up goals and strategies to increase access to arts education in the Indianapolis Public Schools. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So I'm going to ask both of you this. Where is the hunger the greatest? I mean, is it because I noticed, for example, that Ernest referenced Hamilton. And I've got a teenage daughter. I can tell you that there have been several long car trips where she has serenaded us with much of the score as we go along there. So I'm assuming performing arts, but are there other arts where, because I think, and Wanda's made reference to this, particularly, 20, 25 years ago when the first wave of fairly serious education cutbacks, funding cutbacks, the arts often were the first things on the chopping blocks, which is why I use the term restoration, because there is that. And my sense in my other life as a teacher is that there is a hunger among young people for that kind of creativity. But it's not the same hunger for each of them, as our palates are different for all of us. Where, though, are the needs, would you say, the greatest? I'll start with you on that one, Ernest.
So let me back into that question by saying that one of the strengths of Indianapolis is that it has 53-plus arts and cultural organizations that represent lots of different disciplines. And so we're, as part of the survey and as part of the development of the plan, we're not just talking about the music organizations as well as the visual arts organizations. We're also talking about the literary arts organizations. We're here in the home of Kurt Vonnegut. We're talking about those that are in theater, those who are in dance, but also media arts. And what we did as part of this process was actually to look at what are the schools that are highly engaged with different arts organizations, and which schools have the largest gaps in terms of their engagement on those different disciplines. And so our goal is to prioritize those gaps this coming year and see how, in partnership with the arts organizations that have a specific focus on those areas, that the schools can start to reduce those gaps over the course of the next 4 years.
Wanda, when you talk with students, where are the biggest gaps, would you say, in their arts education, or the things that they most hunger to have more exposure to?
What we've learned with our spring fling in the spring break time is theater and dance. So I think it varies, as Ernest mentioned, across all of our schools, but those are the most popular for us. And out of the two, the most popular who want to attend the activities for spring break is dance. But theater is a close second, and I believe it's because there probably are not theater teachers in every school or dance teachers. But from them, conversations with students and also their interest in our spring arts fling, it's been theater and dance.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about arts and education in honor of National Arts and Education Week. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Charles has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Charles, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I am, first I want to say I'm just literally appalled that the arts have gone the way they've gone in the city. I grew up playing in the Indianapolis All City High School Orchestra and things like that. In any case, this thing that's happening is really good. But I teach a class called Creative Minds and Critical Thinking in university. And one of the things that's brought to light is that police officers and people who have technical skills can use the arts to help them to improve their critical thinking. And you can have your folks there talk about that, because that's a very important thing that I think is missing. In that arts is just, airy-fairy stuff, but no, we're understanding. There's a TED Talk about this also, about how the arts can actually help improve your critical thinking. And I'll listen to your response off the air.
Before you go, Charles, real quickly, if you have a link to that TED Talk and you want to put it on our Facebook page, other people can follow it too.
Okay, I'll hunt that up.
And you can find us at No Limits WFYI on Facebook.
Okay.
Thanks much for the call.
Sure.
Certainly. Charles Point, Ernest, I'll let you take the first crack.
One of the things we found in our survey in terms of teachers is that 82% of teachers and principals believe that the arts as a value are a great deal of value in terms of child development, foundational skills, including their critical thinking skills. And so that is the point made in terms of students is actually validated by the teacher reactions to our survey this past year. What we have not looked at as part of this is the impact in terms of the police force, but that is something to look at in the future.
Wanda, what does it do? Because there are certain children, students, whose creative artistic impulses are I'm trying to use a word that's not judgmental here, but are just fuller than others, that it is more important to them than perhaps some. I'm trying to get at, what is it like for them when they don't have an outlet in school for those impulses, for that need? What does it do to the educational experience for them?
Great question. It makes school just another boring activity for them. For students, they need to have intrinsic and extrinsic rewards when it comes to schools. And so when a student, if they're major push and love and desire the arts. And so if they spend the majority of their time and they don't get that experience, they don't get that opportunity to express themselves creatively, it really turns the light bulb off for them. And so when they think of school, they think of things very negatively. And so yesterday during the Arts Garden presentation by Young Actors Theater, it was very interesting to hear from the actors, the young actors, to share what school means for them. And it's exactly what you shared. And so they talked about their creativity and how when they participate in the arts, they feel more confident, they find their voice. And so there was another group that participated, the Ashanti, I think, theater presented, and the young men talked about how before they were shy, but the arts has made them very self-confident about themselves. And so what the arts will do for students when it's in their school is to provide the hook for school. It makes school an exciting place for them where they feel valued and wanted.
Is it possible to deliver, though, the kind of arts curriculum without these kind of community partnerships? I mean, a couple of generations ago, we would have thought of arts education as just a collective responsibility that we share as part of having public schools. Increasingly now, it is, you need to leverage these relationships with not-for-profit organizations and all of that to deliver these things. How does that affect the way arts education is delivered? I'll start with Ernest.
I think it's a whole new world in terms of partnerships than when I was a kid, for instance. And there were more arts classes, more music classes. One of the things that the arts community really wants to communicate is that we're part of this community, and so we have an investment in the success of our schools and using the arts of which we are experts in fighting delinquency, detachment, and also dropout. What we know is that students who are engaged in the arts are three times more likely to win an attendance award, four times more likely to be recognized for academic achievement, and that the dropouts for those who are engaged in the arts are five times lower than those who are not.
In terms of the these partnerships from your side of the equation, Wanda, does it make things easier or is it more complicated? And I realize you're probably not old enough to have been a teacher 30 years ago or 40 years ago.
I start 26 years ago, actually. So it does make it easier. I think in times where public education is seeing so many cuts, our partnerships really support us and bolster us in all the other areas. And so the partnership that we have with the arts is also instrumental in supporting us because we continually hear about cuts in public education. So the more partnerships we have, the more we can do. And it's always wonderful to create things together as a group and not individuals.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about arts and education in honor of National Arts and Education Week. This conversation, like so many we have on No Limits is Part of American Graduate, a continuing initiative of WFYI and other public broadcasting stations to leverage the power of public broadcasting to improve graduation rates and to set young people on the path to successful lives and careers. If you'd like to learn more about American Graduate, please go to our website, and you can find it at amgrad.wfyi.org. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about arts and education in honor of National Arts and Education Week. We're focusing particularly on the unveiling of the Any Given Child Indy 2016-17 Action Plan, with a focus on goals and strategies to increase access to arts education for students in the Indianapolis public schools. My guests are Ernest Disney Britton. He is Indy Arts Council Director of Grant Services and Education Partnerships, and Wanda LeGrand, who is the Indianapolis Public Schools Deputy Superintendent for Academics. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Tim has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to call in because my wife is an art educator. She's in elementary art. I've been in public planning and also in real estate development for all of my career, and I wanted to note that there is a substantial link between art education, design awareness, and then how public spaces are planned and designed. And I think that people underestimate the idea that fundamental art education, fundamental design principles aren't in play all the time when we're designing public space. I've been the veteran of hundreds of public hearings where these issues are discussed, and some people know about it and some don't, but everyone has an opinion. So I wanted to weigh in with the idea that art education in elementary and in secondary schools is fundamental to public design and its ability to design public spaces and understand public design principles.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Tim. I'm going to let Ernest respond to that first.
So one of the things that immediately came to mind with that statement, I totally agree. Thank you, Tim, for making that comment and that connection, is that when we're talking about things such as the arts for art's sake in terms of your traditional music class or visual arts class, but also those co-curricular and also arts integration instructional opportunities, we're also talking about building those foundational skills that will lead to stronger citizens who are able to participate in a larger community dialogue about what makes a community look and feel like a beautiful place that you want to stay and that you want your children to grow up in. So I think it is, I totally agree with him, that it's all building on that of creating a better citizen.
We have a tweet from TeenWorks, they're a nonprofit youth employment program in Indy, says, what are some of the ways arts education can translate to skills beyond being an artist or occupation in that field? Ernest, I think that one's probably pitched your way, but I'd like to hear Wanda's thoughts too.
Shall I go first?
I'll just
share that there is a long list, but I'll also point out that 72% of business leaders say that creativity is the number one skill that they're seeking when they're hiring in terms of college graduates. And so the arts obviously is one of the core ways that we can experience and practice and become and learn to master our ability to be creative change makers.
So the only part that I would add, I agree with the creativity part with helping with the positions. I believe that arts will lay a strong foundation. So if you're in the visual arts, lays a strong foundation for other areas such as our architectural design, architectural engineering, and those areas where you aren't just a visual artist, but you're an artist that works as an engineer. What arts education also does is build your ability to be a strong leader. So if you desire for leadership in your roles, participating in the arts, participating in theater will give you a strong foundation in that area. It also helps, of course, with public speaking. And I believe that what the arts provide is actually a foundation for all of our students to be successful later, because it does help you hone in on the soft skills that are difficult for some students and some young adults as they graduate from college. I remember starting out as a chemical engineering major, and they suggested that we take more classes in creative writing, because as engineers, they said, you will need to know how to write creatively. And I never thought of that. I was very strong in math and science, but they saw the need for the creativity to come alive for me as a future chemical engineer.
Let me ask this. How much, you know, because a lot of these arguments do come down to the value that the arts add to this. Is there a way we can track, and I'm thinking of a comment that the late Kurt Vonnegut made when I was talking with him once, and we talked about the reason people write, and he said, you know, you don't write for money, because for most writers there's not enough money to make it in it to make it worthwhile. Sadly, this is true. But he said, you write for the same reason you practice any art, because it feeds your soul. And I think about one of the things we talk about in education these days is this notion of grit. You know, Paul Tough and some other folks have written on it extensively. The resilience, the ability to for students and children to overcome obstacles in their lives. One would think that if their souls are being fed, or if they have expressive outlets, that would lend itself to that kind of resilience. Is there anything connecting practicing an art to grit, resilience, whatever you want to call it, whatever the buzzword is? I'm going to start with Wanda on that one.
I haven't read research specific to that area, but in my opinion, yes. I believe that the arts participating in arts will give you an outlet and coping mechanisms to help you exist with your day-to-day life. And so I love the idea of art feeds your soul, because if you are fed and well-nourished in your soul, then you can persevere. I think that sometimes perseverance is hard to tap into because we feel so drained, and I believe sometimes students feel drained. The society and the world today is a different one for them than it maybe was for us 20 or 30 years ago, being a high school senior. So for them, I love the idea of art feeding their soul, because I do think that helps your soul. You cannot be resilient or persevere if your soul is empty. Very difficult.
Yesterday, one of the students, as part of the kickoff ceremony from Young Actors Theater, pointed out that for her, if it were not for engagement in the arts, and specifically for her, it was theater, she didn't believe that she would be here at all today. So it really spoke to there's a great deal of research, rather new research, about the impact of being engaged in the arts in fighting depression, detachment, not being able to cope with the world that you're in right now. And so I think there is a great deal of evidence for that in terms of feeding your soul. I also want to point out that several people, going back to the question about career development or other opportunities, on the blog for the project, anygivenchildindy.org, yesterday there was a blog post that was posted by Michael Grady, who was a sportscaster here in town. And so I think he's also known as the voice of the Pacers. And so a person who is really invested in sports and broadcasting, but he credits his experience in the arts as what gave him that platform for launching a career in sports and broadcasting. And I can go through the list in terms of people involved in sports, lawyers as well. And so the arts have really been foundational for a lot of careers.
We've got an email question from a listener named Deborah. If you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. She says, I am a retired IPS teacher who still volunteers with the system. The primary teachers have been dictated to spend the majority of their day teaching language arts and math. Science and social studies have disappeared, although my colleagues try to incorporate these areas through LA. My question to Wanda, unless a school does have a program like Art for Heart, how are these young children going to develop an interest and a foundation of knowledge of the arts, let alone geography, she puts with a frowning face?
Great question. The high-stakes testing that exists in our country overall, I believe that teachers do feel that pressure. Within the schools, the kids, as I mentioned before, they do have an art and a music teacher. And what I've noticed in the classrooms, since we've instituted at least one in every school, is that students love going to those classrooms. So they have that within their special times because they get a chance to either see them every day or every other day for a 90-minute block or every day for 45 minutes. And so they have those classes. But what happens with Art with Heart and all the other organizations that partner with us, they get that experience on top of what the traditional art or music teacher will provide. And so even more partnerships will allow students to have even more exposure with the arts.
Gotten another email question from a listener named Laura. She says, it is such a pleasure to hear your guest announce the Any Given Child initiative. I am an artist and arts administrator who helped develop programs in schools, and I wanted to emphasize that there is one clear benefit that wasn't emphasized, is that since the schools are also an outlet for expression, a huge benefit is that students activate their higher order thinking skills or metacognition. This is the kind of thinking that synthesizes and draws parallels between two areas. Students first have to absorb the topic, and many times using a metaphor drawn from music or art allows the students to understand in a concrete way something that is more abstract. A further goal is that they are inspired to go on to make their own statement that involves their life experience, otherwise known as literacy. Thank you for this program. I'm assuming I'm going to hear an amen from both of
Absolutely.
You. But if you want to add other thoughts, please feel free, Ernest.
One of the things that comment made me think about was a conversation I had with a IPS teacher as well as a Zionsville public school teacher yesterday. We had, as part of Arts Education Week, a beer and dialogue about arts education at Sun King Brewery last night. And both the teacher from Zionsville and the one from IPS pointed out how the students that they work with that are deeply engaged in the arts have really had the opportunity of going on to expanded opportunities in terms of the arts. So as we talk about the arts education and how it helps in all of these different areas, I don't want to forget to mention that we have incredibly talented people here, young people here, and that sometimes people will talk about arts education as if it doesn't have anything about creating the next generation of artists, like the person who sent that email. But we are also talking about generating and nurturing the next generation of artists.
We are talking about the importance of the arts in education here on No Limits in honor of National Arts and Education Week. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Catherine has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon. I just have to say, as a professional music educator and I'm a band director in the area at a local school, it's so refreshing to hear that this conversation is on national radio within Indianapolis and to hear the support that's coming out from all of the community about arts education and the significance that our program that it makes. I just wanted to add that in addition to all the wonderful things that have been made as a comment on our program, on your program, excuse me.
No, it's your program, too. If you're listening, it's your
you.
Program, too.
That we also have, as an educator in the arts, wonderful opportunities to teach across the curriculum, where we're reaching students and engaging them not only in music or art, but saying, hey, look at this that happened geographically or historically or culturally, and how that connects to students, not only what's happening in their social studies or language arts class, but also how it can connect to them through music or through art. And it cuts across all curriculums, and it just allows us to engage that conversation with the students, and then hopefully see them as they get older to add to that in different careers. I just think it's such a value, and I appreciate the conversation that's being had today.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing your story, Catherine.
Yes, thank you.
Certainly. That value of cutting across, I'm going to go back, I'm probably, if my daughter's, well, she's in school, so she should not be listening to this. But But
she'll sing to you tonight. If she were,
I think this gets to Catherine's point too, though. Because of Hamilton, I remember on one trip, spring break trip, when we were headed down to North Carolina, we ended up having a long conversation first about, the American Revolution and all of the various legacies, good and bad, that came out of that. And then because, my ancestors and therefore her ancestors' migration pattern was from the Carolinas up through Tennessee and Kentucky, about personal history. But that one piece of art stimulated, conversation about American history, about genealogy, about, the whole idea of geography being destiny and all of that. Do we see these kinds of connections in the classroom all the time, Wanda?
I think you see them in various pockets across the school system. I think you definitely will see them in our performing arts schools. You'll see them at Broad Ripple Arts and Humanities School, as well as Edison Visual and Performing Arts. But you also will see them in other pockets of our school.
I've gotten a post on Facebook from a listener named Corey. And if you want to find us on Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Corey says, as an artist, I'd like to offer that I note often that people that don't participate in creative activities as a part of their set of hobbies or extracurricular activities often see the nonlinear creative thinking as an inaccessible and impossible skill to engage, and they fear the lack of structure their creative thoughts represent. I have to wonder if the fear of engaging arts and supporting arts is related to the idea that because it's not emphasized as an equal skill to math problem solving, language reading, etc., that it's not a bare-bones practical activity. Creativity and arts enrich our way of viewing our community, relationships in the world, being able to engage the world creatively enhances our understanding of where we fit in society and enhances our ability to engage and enhances our ability to understand others. I could go on and on. Ernest, I'm going to let you pick up her point.
So let me say that there are basically three steps in terms of any given child that relate to that point. One is that we're certainly going to match schools with arts organizations, and that is directly tied to that point. We're also going to train more teachers in arts integration and also connecting people in terms of the other disciplines. And we're also going to fill the gaps in terms of arts instruction. I think that overall, the barriers that we've identified are only going to be faced and those gaps filled as long as we are all working together and seeing how every element has to be put together as part of this wall of support that's moving forward. And my big goal is to make sure that we go to the original goal of Arts and Education Week, is that we're starting the conversation. Most Americans, and I suspect also Hoosiers, believe that arts education should be a core part of the curriculum. But most of us, less than half of us, even have a conversation with our kids about what's happening in terms of the arts, in terms of their weekly classroom.
Yeah, to summarize, I mean, what I'm hearing here is that art should be a staple and not dessert. Basically,
yes.
That they're an essential part of your intellectual,
spiritual
growth.
And in the schoolroom and also at home.
Yes. I'd like to thank both of you. This has been a fabulous conversation. I've enjoyed talking with both of you. I'd also like to suggest to our listeners that they continue the conversation on our Facebook page. Push Wanda and Ernest to do the same. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.